Good morning. It's 9:06. John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn today on the Ideas Network. Well, it's a pretty safe bet that most of us don't lay awake nights thinking about how we'll vote our shares in company X, Y, or Z. Mostly that's because a lot of our ownership is indirect in the form of a pension plan, a 401k, or mutual fund. It's also because in some cases we don't know our rights as shareholders. And not all shares of stock have the same privileges. Recently, however, shareholder advocacy has had a higher profile thanks in part to the tougher say-on-pay rules put in effect by the Dodd-Frank law. Shareholders have become increasingly sensitive, for example, to huge pay increases given to management even when performance doesn't seem to warrant it. Well, this morning, we're going to have a discussion about corporate governance, and we will hopefully give you the tools that you need to be a more active shareholder, should you wish to do so. And to help us go through all of this information and sort it all out, I have two guests this hour. Keith Johnson, former legal counsel to the State of Wisconsin Investment Board and attorney at Reinhardt, Borner, and Van Buren. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning, John. It's great to be here.
And Jessica Clark, advocate relationship manager at MoxieVote.com. Good morning to you and welcome.
Good morning, John. Hi, Keith. How are you?
Well, now that the gang's all here, Keith Johnson, I'd like to start with some basics about corporate governance, just to give some context for the rest of the discussion. In 500 words or less, how is governance supposed to work in the corporate setting?
Well, you've basically got a three-legged stool. You've got the board and management and shareholders. And you know, similarly to the three branches of government that we're used to, each one of those legs of the corporate governance stool plays a unique function. Obviously, management is more in charge of the day-to-day operations at the company. Shareholders represent the owners of the company, and they, at least in theory, elect the board of directors, which is charged with sort of the larger, big-picture oversight of the firm and establishing general policies and selecting management and evaluating management.
Now, I heard the italics you put around in theory when you talked about the shareholders electing the board of directors. How does it really happen?
Well, you know, it's getting better than it has been, but corporate elections have been described by some as being akin to a Soviet election. Essentially, what you have is the board of directors selecting the nominees that they will put forward as director candidates. And, you know, most of the time, 99% of the time, basically, you have one slate of candidates, and that's who the shareholders get to vote for or against. At a lot of companies, it's not even a majority vote kind of rule, basically. If the candidate gets one vote, they're elected, and you don't have any choice on the ballot to vote against that candidate. Now, one of the things that has been happening over the last 5 years or so is that there are companies that are starting to move to a more democratic majority vote standard where a director candidate actually has to receive a majority of the votes cast by shareholders to be elected as a director. However, there still is a proviso in that the way most companies have implemented that majority vote standard is that they reserve the right for the board to decide whether or not to accept the resignation of a director that has not been reelected or has not been elected by the shareholders. So there are numerous situations where director candidates that did not receive a majority vote are still holding over in office, reappointed by their fellow board members, despite the fact that they did not receive a majority vote of the shareholders.
Well, in this morning's New York Times, there is a story that says that one of the big shareholders in Walmart, or a significant one anyway, the New York pension funds, are going to challenge the election of certain directors at Walmart. And this is this controversy goes back several years, but the most recent dust up that the board has had with its shareholders surrounds the scandal in the bribery, Walmart bribery scandal in Mexico, and the alleged cover up. You're familiar. You saw that story this morning, I understand. Just set us up a little bit for what the relationship is between that those pension funds, and there are a number of them in New York City who are shareholders in Walmart and who are very unhappy with the board and its board, and how you think that might play out.
Well, the New York City employees' pension funds, and I think that there are five of them that cover different types of employees, firefighters, police, regular city employees, teachers, in New York City, basically, collectively are reported to own 4.7 million shares of Walmart, which sounds like a lot, but, you know, in the grand scheme of things, it's probably less than 1% of the outstanding shares of Walmart, a fairly small percentage. But nonetheless, the comptroller of the city of New York, who runs the pension funds, announced is that they are going to be voting against the five directors at Walmart. There has been a long history of engagement between a number of pension funds that own Walmart and management at the company around compliance kinds of issues. Walmart has a long history, as we know, of issues with compliance with equal opportunity kinds of things. The latest dust up in Mexico, I think, adds fuel to the fire, and apparently the comptroller has decided that it's time to start looking to try to get new directors on the board at Walmart.
Okay, so they only own a 1%. When somebody like this steps up and says, you know, there's a problem here, that sounds like it might be kind of a signal to the other directors. Or to the other shareholders in Walmart, presumably large institutional shareholders, they might take note of this and decide to take action on their own. Should this be, if I'm a Walmart board member, how concerned should I be that New York City is unhappy with me?
I think you should be very concerned. You're right. I mean, to the extent that you'd have a large, sophisticated shareholder standing up and saying, look, I think there's a problem at this company. Whatever the company is, it's really incumbent on both the board at that company and other shareholders to take notice of what that shareholder is saying and why they're concerned about it. So I do think that that the directors have cause for concern.
And Jessica Clark, I'd like to get you in on this as well. This seems like a clear case where shareholder advocacy is definitely necessary in terms of making sure that the company is run the way it's supposed to be. Talk a little bit about how shareholders can have a voice in the companies in which they have a part.
Yes. Well, I agree with what Keith said. It's definitely large institutional investors definitely have a sway with the way that companies view their decisions, view their directors. But another important piece of shareholder voting and getting involved with the companies they own is for individual shareholders to pay attention to these issues as well. So, you know, one of the things that we at MoxieVote, you know, try to educate people about is that the kind of issues that they're passionate about in everyday life, whether that's the environment or corporate governance initiatives or political spending, they actually do apply to the companies they own stock in. So as Keith mentioned, kind of different, when shareholders are upset about different issues, it definitely sends alarms to the companies that, you know, maybe they should be doing something different. As far as, you know, getting more involved with these kind of things, it does kind of, institutional investors can kind of point the way, but individuals definitely have a say as far as, you know, holding 30% of the outstanding shares of stock in America. So that's a pretty large and substantial amount of voting power. For, you know, what we try to do is kind of point these issues out to people, whether it's in relaying news stories or making the connection between the companies they own and their involvement, for example, in political donations. So, you know, especially during this year as an election year, a lot of shareholders are concerned with issues in addition to directors, in addition to compensation packages, but, you know, things like what candidates are their companies donating money to. So we try to make it a little bit easier by, you know, allowing our MoxieVote users to find out more information about different organizations or larger institutional investors who are concerned about getting companies to pay attention to those different topics.
So are there larger funds that individual shareholders tend to follow, and who would you recommend as role models here?
Well, there are certain kinds of, like, large institutional investors. Pension funds definitely have sway as far as a lot of corporate governance initiatives. There's also a group of larger investors called socially responsible investors. They're SRI institutions that, you know, vote in accordance with shareholder proposals that support, for example, environmental initiatives or human right initiatives, to make sure that the companies that they own stock in and the companies that they cast their proxy votes for are following socially responsible actions. So there are larger institutional firms that have that as their sole focus, which individuals can kind of fall in line if they need a resource for how should I vote my proxy ballot. And we actually display that on MoxieVote. You can see the way that some larger investors, like pension funds, like socially responsible asset managers, are voting. So if individuals kind of need a guide as to, you know, what initiatives to follow or what director might be beneficial to the company, or, you know, what kind of shareholder issues are out there this year, I would definitely suggest, you know, looking at larger groups, but also we have some smaller groups as well that have specific agendas. Like a lot of religious groups that we have on our sites are focused on human rights issues. We have a couple environmental groups that are solely focused on, you know, sustainability initiatives. So we try to break it down as far as what kind of issues users could be interested in and kind of give them a voting guide.
Keith Johnson, when you were the legal counsel to the State of Wisconsin Investment Board, how active was the board in terms of its participation in corporate governance? And I don't know how far back your association goes, but I remember when there was a lot of talk about divestment in anything connected with South Africa during the apartheid period. There was quite a bit in the news about it almost a daily basis for quite a while, as people wanted the state pension fund to be not associated with South Africa in any way, that kind of thing. Talk a little bit about when you were working with the State Investment Board, how they behaved as shareholders.
Well, my history with the Investment Board actually does go back to the apartheid days, but in general, my view is that the taxpayers and the citizens of Wisconsin are actually very lucky to have a pension fund that has had the ability to be independent enough to basically exercise some fiduciary judgment around how it votes its proxies at the thousands of companies that they own. The Wisconsin retirement system is actually, I think it's the 23rd largest pension fund in the world. So it's a fairly large pot of money. And in addition to being able to vote the shares that they have in companies in accordance with what they think are the best long-term interests of the retirement fund participants and shareholders generally, the investment board typically has a large enough ownership position in a number of companies to be able to engage with the companies around issues that they are concerned about, whether it's the way that executive compensation is structured or whether it's compliance issues anti-takeover kinds of provisions which would insulate the management at the company from being removed if they are consistently underperforming their peers. Large investors like the State of Wisconsin Investment Board have the ability to call up the company and have a conversation with them about what their concerns are. That's received well in some instances. In other instances, it's not successful. But I think that that's a real advantage that oftentimes the smaller retail investors just don't have.
We're going to take a break. I want to put this question to our listeners. Do you own stock? How active are you in voting it? Are you aware of what your privileges, rights, responsibilities are as a stockholder? Would you like to know more about it? Do you have questions about how you can engage with corporate management as a stock owner? Maybe you want to know what that means and what you should do. Well, we have the people here who can answer that question for you, and here's how you get in touch. 800-486-8655 is the toll-free number, 800-486-8655. You can also send an email to talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. And you can also find the Kathleen Dunn program on Facebook and leave your comment or question there. Again, 800-486-8655. Just quickly before we go to a break, Keith Johnson, is there a moment you recall when you were successful at changing corporate behavior?
Oh, yeah. There have been a number of situations where the investment board in particular and other investors have been able to change corporate behavior. One of the most memorable, I think, is back when you remember the company Kmart.
Oh, yeah.
They were in the process of trying to deal with their declining fortunes and did have some fairly profitable subsidiaries that they had wanted to spin out with what was called letter stock. So they wanted to basically separate those assets from the broader company. The investment board was very concerned about the impact that would have on shareholders' stock values in Kmart and opposed that. We're fairly aggressive in trying to reach out to other large shareholders, and we're successful in getting that defeated at the shareholder meeting, and the company backed down. So, unfortunately, it didn't ultimately, save Kmart, but at least it gave the stock a nice boost after that value-reducing initiative was defeated.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk about what happened with the Citigroup shareholder vote against the management compensation plan and how that's related to the Dodd-Frank Act. And we'll continue our discussion. Again, if you'd like to find out more about how you can be a more active shareholder, maybe do some shareholder advocacy yourself, if you have questions about that, we have the people here who can answer them. 800-486-8655, talk@wpr.org, or find us on Facebook. Look for the Kathleen Dunn Show Facebook page. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. 9:27, you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Here's what's coming up later on today on the Ideas Network. America is a country that has forgotten how to walk. That's according to Ben Maron's guest after 3 o'clock this afternoon, who says it's time to take a fresh look at our oldest mode of transportation. That's after 3. This hour, we're talking about corporate governance and shareholder advocacy. And I have two guests with me to help us talk about some of the details without getting too far into how the sausage is made. Keith Johnson is a former legal counsel to the State of Wisconsin Investment Board and an attorney at Reinhardt, Berner & Van Buren. Jessica Clark is an advocate relationship manager at MoxieVote.com. And again, we have lines available if you'd like to ask a question about how you can be a shareholder advocate or if you've got questions about how corporate governance works. 800-486-8655. Talk at WPR.org. We're also on Facebook. Look for the Kathleen Dunn Facebook show page. All right. Now, I one of the things I meant to mention, and we're going to get to the Citigroup thing, but I want to I want to clear this up first. How does voting take place? Jessica, why don't you talk about this? How does and explain the concept of proxy?
Okay, sure. Well, shareholders in a company get to vote in the annual company meeting. Like that's the basic outline of it. But how that happens can either be shareholders will get a paper proxy ballot in their mailbox. It's often a large 80-plus page document with a ballot attached. And that document will tell you everything about the board of directors, the company's compensation packages, and any shareholder resolutions that may be on the ballot that year. Another way to get your ballot is electronically, and you can have your broker deliver your ballot electronically on MoxieVote, and you can just submit your vote electronically rather than sending it back in the mail. But basically, if you own at least one share of stock in the company approximately 3 to 4 months prior to the annual meeting, you'll get a say in casting your vote. So that's the basic proxy 101, essentially. Getting involved with corporate governance and to really understand it means having to read through your company's large proxy packet about the board of directors, about the shareholder resolutions. So that can be complicated in itself. And a lot of times, individual shareholders just don't vote. Individuals hold 30% of the outstanding stock in the U.S., and so they have a lot of power, a lot of voting power. But unfortunately, it's sometimes cumbersome and difficult and hard to understand. So it's often easier just to, toss it aside or throw it away. But as long as you own one share of stock about 3 months before the meeting, you do get a say. It's kind of interesting to learn about the different topics that your company might be going through that year that's presented by different shareholders. As I mentioned before, this year is a big, the big issue is corporate political spending. So a lot of shareholders have been passionate about that and really gotten more engaged this year just because it does play a larger role in, the American, corporate governance or corporate governance of your company plays a big role in the American political arena this year. Do you have any, specific questions about?
Well, I'm trying to understand how the process works. And since most of us don't own individual shares of stock, we're probably invested in a 401k plan, or maybe we have a mutual fund, or like in my case, I'm a state employee, and so I'm investing in the Wisconsin State Retirement System, which their funds are managed by the Wisconsin Investment Board. So I don't have a share of stock that I have in a, it's not framed in my office that I own a share of GE or Walmart or some other company, but I have money in a pension fund that owns a lot of shares of stock. So in that instance, what are my options?
Well, in that instance, your vote is cast in line with the pension fund. So, there are ways to learn more about how pension funds vote and what kind of corporate governance issues they focus on. Unfortunately, if you're in a mutual fund or a pension fund, your vote is cast alongside with the mutual fund manager or with the pension funds. Mm-hmm. But if you own a share in mutual funds, you often get a chance to vote on their board of directors. It's not annually like individual companies have their annual meetings. Mutual funds hold their meetings approximately every 5 years, but they're not as regular as individual companies.
Well, I wanted to go to Keith because I wanted to know, Keith, how much communication does the Wisconsin Investment Board, for example, get from individual pension holders about how they would like the pension fund to vote or to behave in terms of corporate governance? Not a lot, I would guess.
Yeah, it's in a way, it's surprisingly little. But, that could be because they're doing a good job of it. But, you know, you raise a really, really difficult issue in terms of the mutual fund investments that people typically have in their 401ks and deferred compensation plans, because the companies that end up being the recipients of the money that they're investing through those mutual funds basically there's no flow through directly to the individual beneficial ultimate investor, the individual whose money is being put in the 401k or the mutual fund. So all you can really do is basically be very attentive to how your mutual funds that you're putting money in are actually voting the shares that they're holding on your behalf. And you know, some people make it a high priority to try to identify what kinds of voting practices the different mutual funds have. And I don't know if MoxieVote has that kind of information, but I know that there is another website called proxydemocracy.org, which has a fairly good amount of information about how different mutual fund organizations tend to vote their proxies. And they will rank them on different categories, on executive compensation or environmental issues. So you can, before you put your money in or when you're deciding whether or not you want to keep money in a mutual fund, take a look at whether or not you think they are voting the shares in accordance with your interests.
We have full phone lines, and I want to go to calls because we have some that are really relevant to what we're talking about right now. But I want to just get this out because I said I would before the break, and I didn't get to it yet. The Citicorp situation, back in April, the proxy vote took place, and the shareholders voted against the pay plan that management had proposed. The CEO, I think, was going to get something like a 75% raise, and the shareholders weren't happy with that, and so they said, no, that's wrong. And I'm probably way oversimplifying what happened, but in the Cliff's Notes version world, that's how we'll leave it. How common is that, and that's a non-binding vote. So the board can simply say, you know what, yeah, I know you voted, but we're going to go ahead and do what we wanted to anyway. What are the consequences of that, do you think? And how likely is that Citicorp vote to affect how other votes are going to go as these annual meetings are coming up here shortly? And Jessica, we'll start with you.
Right. Well, you're absolutely right, John, that these say-on-pay votes that were mandated by the Dodd-Frank financial reform law are non-binding. So essentially, shareholders get a say in their company compensation packages, but the companies don't necessarily have to do anything about it, which is kind of frustrating. And, some shareholders often ask the question, why bother? But, sending a message like this to a large financial institution like Citigroup is a pretty powerful message. 55% of Citigroup shareholders voted against the pay package, which was for CEO pay of approximately $15 million. So, it's interesting that a lot of companies companies don't often get a huge shareholder no vote. But, especially in the aftermath of Occupy Wall Street, the financial crisis within the past few years, this definitely sends a message. And, this is only the second year that the Dodd-Frank vote, the say-on-pay vote, has been in place and mandated on company ballots. So the first year, not a lot of shareholders were familiar with it. They didn't know exactly what would become of, you know, their say on pay, essentially. But this year, especially after Occupy Wall Street, I think it sends a very strong message. You know, Citigroup isn't, like, forced to do anything about it, but when more than half of your shareholders, you know, many of which are institutional as well as retail investors, say that they're not happy, it's a very clear message that something needs to change.
Well, yeah, John, this is really a big deal, actually. I mean, Citigroup is the first big-name company that has received a negative say-on-pay vote. So shareholders really are sending a message here that the compensation of the CEO in particular at Citigroup is not connected with the firm's performance. I mean, Citigroup has been a consistently underperforming company over the last, you know, 1, 3, and 5 years, and that's really what the institutional shareholders are looking at. They've got a whole range of compliance problems, from failing the Federal Reserve Board stress test to the $2 billion settlement that they paid to states' attorneys general in settlement of litigation around their loan practices. So the company has basically had lots of problems, and shareholders were upset that the CEO got some nice bonuses.
Well, yeah, I think, I don't pretend to understand these matters of finance. My math gives me a headache, but my understanding is that they were proposing to take his pay from like $1.7 million to somewhere north of $15 million, and there was didn't sound like there was a whole lot behind it in terms of the brilliance of this individual's performance. What would happen, and I want to include going back to the Walmart example where you had the various pension funds in New York City saying they weren't happy with the board of directors about some compliance issues and some other things that were going on. Is it likely, or is it a common practice if a large investor says, you know, we don't like the way this is working, and if the board of directors says, well, we don't care what you like, we're going to do it this way anyway, that these pension funds and say, you know what, we're going to take our money and go someplace else. And what effect does that have on a company if some large institutional investor just suddenly decides, you know what, we don't want to own company X anymore because they're not listening to us, so we're dumping all their stock? Is that something that's likely to happen? And if so, what would be the consequences of that? And Keith, why don't you go first on this one?
Yeah, John, this is right where we're at now in terms of development of how say on pay, this advisory shareholder vote on executive compensation is going to unfold. We're in the second year, and one of the things that we saw after the first year was that a number of large investors engaged with the companies that received significant, even if they didn't get majority negative votes on their say-on-pay provision, if they received, you know, 20 or 30% of shareholder votes against their executive compensation, investors are in touch with those companies. They're talking to the boards at those companies, and there have been a number of companies that have changed their practices going forward. So I think that we're going to see more of that. At companies that don't do that, you're going to start to see shareholders voting against the board members and trying to get the directors replaced ultimately. It was interesting. You also had a lawsuit that was filed against Citigroup after the say-on-pay vote was received. So that's another route that I think you're going to see more of in the future.
We're going to go to the phones now. We'll start in Antioch, Illinois, and hear from Jack. Jack, thanks for holding.
Yes, here's my question. Good organizations like T. Rowe Price, Vanguard, Fidelity, Schwab, they do not want to offend the very potential customer base for their 401k programs, et cetera, as sponsoring agents. So their motto is make no waves. The huge federal employees thrift savings plan is extremely opaque and secretive in their voting, and their motto, too, is make no waves. And finally, hedge funds, which in my opinion have the least social responsibility, are not even regulated. And I believe those should be regulated. And I'd like the comments of your guests.
All right. Jessica, we'll start with you on this. And then, Keith, I want to hear you on this issue as well.
Well, thank you. Thank you for calling in. And you're right. It is sometimes difficult to kind of like understand exactly the way larger investment firms are voting or like what kind of issues they support. So, you know, that I do agree shareholders will, you know, want more clarity on that, more transparency as far as the way their companies, even those that they're holding their 401ks with and mutual funds with, are voting. So I think, you know, as Keith mentioned, that in the upcoming year, shareholders will definitely be wanting more transparency with that. The way that it will come about, you know, I imagine that it will be through shareholder engagement and voting and conversations with larger institutions, as Keith mentioned. You know, I don't really have much experience with hedge funds. Keith, do you have any advice on that?
Well, Keith, hang on just a second. I want you to talk about the kind of thin line that mutual funds skate right on the edge of kind of there's some almost inherent conflicts of interest here, aren't there?
Well, yeah. You know, from my perspective, I think that it's a difficult spot to be in if you are a mutual fund manager because you are, on the one hand, you have a legal obligation to vote your proxies in the best interests of your ultimate investors, the ultimate beneficiaries who are putting money in the mutual fund. On the other hand, you're a money-making business that is trying to get additional investors to put money in your funds, and you want to manage money for corporate America, which has control of their own corporate pension funds, you know, their 401k plans, and their corporate assets in the corporate treasury. So you've got organizations that are making decisions on proxy votes that are also marketing to the management at the corporations whose votes they are, you know, whose shares they're voting. So there is a bit of a conflict there, which is why transparency and looking at the voting record of your mutual funds through sites like proxydemocracy.org, or if you are savvy on the internet, there actually are on the SEC website, EDGAR, the vote reports of all of the mutual funds. It's hard to find. They're fairly difficult to interpret, but they're there.
We had a caller who couldn't hold on but wanted to know how to get proxy vote results from companies they own stock in. This person has tried several times, apparently unsuccessfully, to get that information. Jessica, how can we get that info?
The companies put out a document usually about 3 weeks after the annual meeting. So it is, you know, difficult to find again, unless it's a headline story like Citigroup was. You have to go on the SEC website, look up the specific company by ticker, and then see their latest filings, which will, they'll list all their shareholder votes, you know, for, against, or abstain votes. And you'll have to figure out kind of yourself, percentage-wise, like what shareholders voted for what different issues. So it isn't very clear. It is very tricky. So that's definitely an area that needs improvement as well. So unfortunately, unless it's big headline stories, you have to go searching yourself on the SEC site.
Yeah, although some companies do actually on their own company websites have a corporate governance section of the website where you can go into SEC filings. And companies do have an obligation now to report within, I think it's 5 days after the end of the shareholder meeting, what the vote results are. So it's out there. Yet some companies, it's not easy to find. Other companies, if you go to their website and go to the corporate governance section, you'll find it fairly easily. But if they want to make it difficult for shareholders and the public to find it out, they'll do that.
Okay. Let's take another call. This time we'll go to River Falls and hear from Jeff. Jeff, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. Yeah, my question is about the Wisconsin retirement system, and I have a serious concern about the present commission that Governor Walker has to study the retirement fund and supposedly reform the fund, especially looking at past intrusions by legislatures trying to claim that they need to divest because of Darfur and other things that were just totally bogus. And so my concern is that they're not trying to reform the system, but take a very well-functioning program, like you talked about, and privatize it so that it's nowhere near as functioning as well for the recipients, but profiteers along the way.
Well,
that's my question.
Yeah, good question. And I think we're going to have to wait and see what happens and what the report says when it comes out. My understanding is that it's scheduled to be released sometime this summer, so I don't want to sort of prejudge what might be in that. You know, I do know that there is an appreciation of the status of our pension fund, the Wisconsin retirement system, as being well-funded, well-managed, and successful. It's a model that is looked to elsewhere. So I think it will be difficult to make a good argument that massive changes are needed in the structure. But we'll have to wait and see. I hope that your scenario doesn't play out, but please keep your eye on the ball to see what happens when that report comes out.
Jeff, thanks for the call. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk some more about corporate governance and specifically how you can be more active if you choose to do that. And if you've got questions about how to get involved, now would be a great time for you to call. 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Email talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. And you can also find us on Facebook. Look for the Kathleen Dunn Show page on Facebook and leave your comment or question there. And by the way, we do have a link to moxievote.com both on the Facebook page and on the Kathleen Dunn Show page at WPR.org. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 9:51. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Stick around, another hour of the program to go after 10 o'clock. Last week's escape of a Chinese dissident from house arrest unexpectedly shifted U.S.-China relations, made them more complicated. Next hour, I'll be talking to an NYU professor about Chen Guangcheng and Beaujolais and the potential diplomatic crisis brewing between the United States and China. That's next hour. This hour, we're talking about corporate governance, specifically shareholder advocacy. A number of news stories have surfaced over the last month. The Citigroup or Citigroup shareholders saying, hey, we don't think that the CEO of this company deserves a 75% raise. We don't approve of this pay package. You had the New York pension funds telling the Walmart board of directors, we think you're going in the wrong direction and we're going to oppose your reelection at the next annual meeting. Things like that happening. We had Occupy protesters who were shareholders at Wells Fargo try to make their voices heard at a shareholder meeting. They were actually removed for disrupting the meeting. But elsewhere, shareholders are becoming a little more active in their role with corporations and letting them know whether they're happy or not with decisions that the boards of directors are making. And we're one of the things we're talking about is how you can be more active, if you'd like to be, as a shareholder. My two guests, again, Keith Johnson, former legal counsel to the State of Wisconsin Investment Board and attorney at Reinhard Berner Van Buren, and Jessica Clark, advocate relationship manager at MoxieVote.com. And we have a call from Chippewa Falls. Paul is with us. Let's go to him right now. Paul, good morning.
Morning.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I guess my question or comment is that there's a relationship between the board members of these large companies and the CEO in that the the board members, a lot of them are CEOs themselves of other large companies. And I think there's seems to be a conflict of interest, because I'm sure they're kind of buddies and they go to travel in the same social circles. And how does that conflict of interest get resolved when it comes to salary compensation packages and those type of things? It seems to be a huge conflict of interest. And if the shareholders themselves don't have a strong voice, how does that get resolved, I guess?
Keith, why don't we start with you on this one?
Yeah, Paul, you've raised a critical point. Unfortunately, the way it gets resolved at a lot of companies is they target what's called the 75th or the 90th percentile of peer group compensation, and say basically, like Lake Wobegon, all of our executives are above average, and we should be paying them above average in the top quartile of executives at other companies. The whole corporate governance system is really fraught with conflicts of interest. So that's one of the reasons why I think that it's really important for people like you and others that are the ultimate investors whose money is actually being put at risk here to try to keep an eye on the ball and hold your mutual funds, your pension funds, your 401k plans accountable for what kinds of decisions they are making in voting their proxies and selecting the investment managers that are managing your funds.
And Jessica, can I get your comments on this call too, please?
Sure. I think it's really important as a shareholder, you got to do your research. And I believe there's a website called theyrule.net, which kind of, it's interesting, but it kind of draws a spider web of all the different directors on different company boards. So you can really see the relationship between Director A and which other company boards he sits on. So, as a shareholder, to send a message, you really have to do your research, and you really have to be active with your proxy voting. But you are very correct that it is a small circle of men and women who kind of sit on different boards and have significant influence in the corporate world. The only way to change that is to push for more corporate disclosure to kind of make sure that companies tell their shareholders exactly how much time their directors are actually spending, paying attention to company A versus the other board they sit on at company B. So, that push for disclosure has come from institutional investors like CalPERS and CalSTRS, California pension plans. But it's a tricky web to navigate. I don't have a clear answer as far as how to get around that besides making sure you vote for directors that you feel that are putting in the time, are putting in the effort, and deserve those compensation packages rather than just, flying from meeting A to B to C and, kind of collecting an income from all of those companies.
And we're getting really close to the end of the program, and Jessica, I just want you to talk a little bit about your website and what the difference is between, for example, MoxieVote.com, ProxyDemocracy.org, and a website like SomeOfUs.org. What do you do, and how does that compare with what some of these other websites have?
Okay, great. We try to help people vote their proxy ballots. We help them find organizations that are in line with their values and allow them an easy way to cast their votes. So, for example, if you're interested in corporate governance initiatives, we have various what we call causes on the MoxieVote website that individual shareholders can align themselves with. So, whenever a shareholder goes on our site to either manually vote their proxy ballot because they received it in the mail, or they can automatically vote it because they've signed up to have their brokerage firm deliver their ballots electronically on MoxieVote, they can automatically have their votes aligned with the organizations that they've already identified with. So we try to take out the all the research part, basically, that we've just been talking about which directors to vote for, which shareholder resolutions to support. Because when shareholders align themselves with the organizations that they already trust and already follow, it makes their voting a lot easier and a lot clearer. So that's our main benefit, is being able to see how other shareholders are voting and how larger institutions are voting as well, and what kind of issues they're supporting.
And we do have a link to the that website up on WPR.org on the Kathleen Dunn Show page and on our Facebook site. And I think we'll have links to some of these others there shortly as well, if we don't already. And you know what? We're out of time, unfortunately. We could do another hour on this. Keith Johnson, Jessica Clark, thank you both for being my guests this hour.
Thank you for having us.
You're welcome.
Keith Johnson, former legal counsel to the State of Wisconsin Investment Board. Jessica Clark, advocate relationship manager at MoxieVote.com. Brett Jaspers produced this program, and Rhonda Fanning handled on-air production today. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn. Stick around, another hour to come.